Hello and welcome to the Random Pinoy Geek Podcast, the show where we geek out to three random topics until the timer runs out. I'm your random host, JR, and with me are...
Elvin.
Freddy.
We're friends and geeks who grew up in the Philippines, and in each episode, we hang out and talk about things that are near and dear
to all our little geeky hearts.
But before we start, if you would like to support the show and are a content creator ready to take the next step in your journey, check out episodeify.com. They'll help produce and edit any content you're creating. Whether it's audio or video, short form or long form, they do it all. That's episodeify.com. You'll notice that it's the same estrogen joke. No. All right. You'll notice that I was going to say lack of femininity, but there's no lack in femininity here.
We are multifaceted men.
Well,
that,
but yeah.
That are in touch with both our yin and our yang.
Yeah, it's there's just a lack of sushi.
There's a lack
not
of sushi.
The food.
We're all fully cooked in this episode with our special guest, Freddy,
the president of Blue Dose Distributors
and the founder
of Neutral Grounds. So if you are broke,
a gaming institution in the Philippines, Neutral Gowns, and general, grandfather, godfather.
You're making me sound like
I'm sorry.
Great grandfather of gaming.
Yeah, I was about to comment in the last episode I was in that how come all our topics became like, oh, retro. Like, is that a job at my age?
I was thinking, we need topics that Freddy can contribute to, and Elvin takes old stuff.
That's my topics. I'm talking about retro.
I was talking about polls, so that's like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha even, mm-hmm. Right? So yeah, anyway. Oh, this is totally not an ad. I'm just actually curious, what does Ludus carry? Like, everything? Or is there, like, specific...
We carry trading card games, of which Magic the Gathering would be the most known brand, which it is really the first trading card game that came out and is still pretty dominant. And I think in 2023, they finally reached the $1 billion revenue mark for Magic the Gathering, which made them the biggest brand that Hasbro has, even bigger than Transformers. My Little Pony, G.I. Joe,
Monopoly.
All of these are brands handled by Hasbro. And right
you know what surprising me? What brand surprised me is not bigger than that they carry? Nerf. Because I would think Nerf sells more stuff. Right? No?
It's 50% of the population because it's targeted towards boys. So.
Girls can have guns?
Girls can have guns, but yes.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm just spouting off what I read.
It's my because it was just surprising. That's it. Board game wise,
board games we carry games from Asmodee, which is also the biggest.
They're the biggest
publisher for board games. But more importantly, we've started publishing our own games, designed by Filipino designers, and it's a line we call Larong Atin, which means our games in Filipino. And that's the project I'm really very much into right now. So I'd like to develop the local game designer talent and give them a chance to, you know, develop and showcase their talents.
Yeah, a platform.
A platform,
yeah.
Is the game where there's a chicken that you fold things, is that out yet? I saw a demo, but they said it wasn't out.
Oh, yeah, that's called...
It looked interesting, knowing nothing.
It's called Tayog, and it's not just chickens. It's about birds. That's not yet out. It does have a digital implementation. I think the app is out there, but only available on the Google App Store, not available on the Apple Store. So Tayog is available. You can try it out. There's an app. I don't know if it's... I think you
what
have
does
to
Tayog
pay for
mean,
it.
By the way?
Tayog means the height of your flight. Which, by the way, that I was the one responsible for naming that game. I'm not designing it, but just the name.
But that's actually also a very cool thing because I think a lot of us, especially those pre-internet kids that grew up, we remember times when we would create games because we didn't have access to a lot of the games available. And to be fair, economically, it wasn't really that viable as kids. One of the things that we did as kids was to really make our own games. And we take games that we have available to us, like a toy or a board game or a sticker, and then we'd make a game from it. And so I think Larong Atin is a really good way of sort of reinforcing that thing that we do have, because we make games. It's like part of what we do.
Yeah.
Because we're not satisfied with what we have.
Yep.
So it's really nice.
But it's just that now there's like a million board games.
Yep. That's true. That's true.
When I was a kid, I did a lot of that. Like, I had really bad board games, and then I'd make up rules for them. Yeah.
That wasn't our topic. That was an option. So it's like a random segue, because this is the Random Pinoy Geek Podcast.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. But no, our topic is also going to be gaming related. And I wanted to talk about war games in general. Is that the right term?
War games.
Miniature war games. Because war games could also include
in the
1980s. that movie. But war games is a bit more generic term, which can also
military exercises are war games.
Yeah. yep, that's true. But it also covers board games that are have wars as their
Like Risk.
That's still considered a war game.
Axis and allies.
Yeah,
so miniature war games. The main thing why people don't get into it is it's expensive as toot.
Yeah.
And
it's very expensive.
Oh, did you play any?
No, I had my toys and then they fought each other. Does that count as war games?
Yes, that does count as war gaming. I also remember when I was a kid, we had these toys. We call it little plastic toy soldiers, and in Filipino, we call it tautauhan.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we played with that, and what can you do with it? So we made up rules.
Yeah.
So we had this toy cannon also, which we had, and we would fire it at each other's tautauhans. And then we were just like, we both had shooting galleries, literally.
Here's the thing. Do you remember?
My rule for that was like, our driveway, which is like 1.5 cars wide.
Mm-hmm.
So you litter it with your troops.
Yeah.
You had red, the other one had green, and you throw rocks.
Yeah.
And then you shoot. And then everything's down. And you hide some of them behind the plants. Yep. And just tell them, no, I'm still alive.
There's a thing in our school. So there were like these long bowling alley-like things.
Which were
what? With a hole underneath. Like it's like a bowling alley. It's like a long alleyway with
what were they
columns
for?
I don't know, but I think it's for like, I guess like you have balls and then you're like,
I do have balls,
the A balls that you go across. it's like a long board with walls that sort of keep the action within that long corridor. And then at the end of the corridor is like a bucket or like a hole that catches things. And then what you do is, what we did was, we bring our toys to school and then we put our toys there. And then you'd have your hole in. And then there's like a demarcation line in the middle that's his side and your side. Mm-hmm. And then you'd put your people, your toys in that area. And then he'd put his toys in that area. It's an all-boys school. That's why we're both he's. And so,
I mean,
anyway.
Oh, did I tell you about our daughter's newborn clinic?
Because
people, gender and what's that? Sex and gender, right?
Sex and gender.
But this was a newborn clinic. So it's like, I mean, okay. I don't think
I guess
gender should have TBD, right?
Yeah.
Which is
weird. Yeah. Anyway, it was.
Oh,
anyway,
that was for a newborn. I thought that was for the dogs.
Oh, you thought it was for the dogs?
I thought it was for the dogs.
Which would have made it weirder.
That's a very progressive vet. I thought it was for the dog. Because he also had puppies at the time. So, no, but this toy, so we were, it's a, so
maybe it's because it's not specifically, it's probably a form not specifically for infants.
It might be a generic patient's form. Neonatologist, which is newborn.
The form said that? Or no, it might be a generic doctor. Patient's.
I mean,
it might be a generic patient's
probably,
information.
She probably got it from
like a generic thing.
But it was a baby's form.
The form had a pacifier.
No, it was a. Like,
no, I get what you mean. It had the doctor's thing on top.
No. Like it was from a company which made the forms,
like
right?
Abbott or something,
like whatever, like Avent or something. Really? Yeah. But okay. Yeah,
Sustagen.
Sustagen. Anyway,
going back to the toy, we'd have our toys there, and then we use the Holland, and the goal is your unit is eliminated when it's hit enough times with the Holland that it falls to the back.
Mm. Oh, is it done? Like when it falls, like are you able to get it? No.
There are games like that, but you don't have to do it all the time, because when that happens, you can get into fist fights. So generally, and the thing is the meta advance of that, where G.I. Joes were the preferred ones, because G.I. Joes could hang by the side of the walls.
Yeah.
So they'd hang by the side of the walls. And so the Hollands would just pass harmlessly below their feet. And then that they'd miss the turn.
That's very social Tautohan, G.I. Joes.
Well, Tautohan is weak because it's so small and it gets hit once. But there's smaller ones. Do you remember Mighty Max?
Polly Pocket.
The male version of Polly Pocket. That's a very tiny thing. Or Little Pet Shop, if you have that.
Oh, they were small. Pet Shop, the same company?
If they're all the same company.
The meta is either you do something big, so there's a lot of mass.
Yes.
Or you do something small. Really small, it's hard to hit.
Yeah.
But like, if you have like, what was big then? What was a big
the biggest toy? One that I remember seeing was a Dino Riders.
Like the was the long neck dinosaur with the two eggs.
That's unfair because they had 4 feet. So it would be harder to knock them off.
It's the Triceratops that had a shield.
The shield.
It's just boring. All of the things, all
was
of the...
Was that available in the Philippines or did this come from the States?
I know. It was mine.
No, like, where did you buy it?
I think it was sent from the US.
Yeah, I think because only one of my friends had Dino Riders and he had relatives from the States. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not available locally.
Yeah, that was a cheap thing. Like the import. My import. Because the rest of my toys are like Ghostbusters. I had a Slimer, which was Slimer was like my decoy. Mm-hmm. You'd waste turns trying to hit Slimer. And if he loses, it's okay because he's Slimer. It's just a little thing, you know, that you buy and then it's gonna fall off. Mm-hmm. But that was my war game.
Yeah. What was it? Do you call it Holen or Jolens?
I don't remember what.
But
it's
what
called.
Do you actually call it?
I don't remember. I need to.
They're both acceptable.
Oh, is it?
You can call it Holen or Jolens.
Because I call it Jolens, but
Holen is what I. You're talking about the
marbles.
The marbles. Holen. That's we call it Holen.
That's the actual.
I think Holen is more. Commonly used, but I also
but it's Holen with a J still. It's the same spelling, it's just read differently.
Yeah, but you know, with our Spanish influence, H and J are actually, you know,
yeah, but like interchangeable. In Guarago, where they laugh, they type ja,
yeah,
like,
yeah, but yeah, that's the word game. But I guess that's not the word game we wanted to talk about,
but okay.
But what was the word game that you wanted to talk about, JR?
No, I mean, yeah, no, war games in general, like, what's the term? What's the right?
Miniatures war game.
Miniature war game.
Chess is a war game.
Are the Clicks games considered miniature war games?
Yes.
By so, Clicks, you mean the HeroClix?
HeroClix, Mage 9.
Because there's like different Clicks other than HeroClix. Mm-hmm. That's why it's the Click system.
Mage 9.
Yep.
So it's by WizKids. The first one was Mage 9.
So it was Mage 9.
Which was good until they released 2.0, which made it suck.
Oh, I didn't know.
Because 2.0 came with, like when you buy a booster, it came with a card which had like a sword, a shield. So like the point value of your mini, if you give it a sword, it costs more points, but it has +1 attack or something like that, which just made it weird. That's when it started being bad.
But that's kind of like what miniature war games were before. Everything was like written on paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, but this wasn't written. Like you actually put the weapon.
Oh, there's a physical weapon.
It's it's like a credit card that's pre-cut.
I think to put that was the biggest innovation of the Click system, was because you didn't actually need a specific sheet of paper
it was
to tell you what the miniature does. Everything is on that clicks dial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
which is
and then know, the plus has made it twin.
The very innovative way of changing the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At that time. When Mage Knight came out, it was pre-painted, which is a big barrier.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. For miniature wargaming. Yeah. A lot of people do not like painting miniatures. Even if actually painting miniatures is not a talent. It is a learned skill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can teach anyone how to paint. Wow. Unless you're like, you know, physically impaired or something.
Yeah.
Anyone can learn how to paint miniatures. It's a skill that's even, I would say it's closer to, it's not drawing on a blank sheet of paper. It's closer to coloring books.
Coloring books.
Everyone did coloring books. It's anyone can do coloring books. Painting miniatures is closer to coloring books than it is to drawing on a blank piece of
also,
paper.
Also, it doesn't have to be good, right? As long as, like there are rules depending on...
Yeah.
So let's talk about one of the current games that we have here, which is Conquest. So what are the... Are there color rules for armies in Conquest?
Not really.
Just
only if you're playing with a group that's very anal about it.
But like if it's a... official, what do you call the
official tournament? Mm. I don't think there's a specific rule that everything has to be painted a certain way.
And you don't have to stick to three colors.
I personally, when I run tournaments, I do not require fully painted models.
But some paint, no,
not really.
If someone wants to play with no paint because they just bought the set and they don't have time,
personally, I'm fine with it. As long as it looks like what it's supposed to be, as long as it's at least assembled, and then people can distinguish
it's
what it is.
It's runners. The armies of the flat lords. They're just like
everything's still in the sprue.
They're still in the sprue. They're flat. It's like the army is piled up high.
My point is, as long as it's recognizable and your opponent can distinguish what it is, then you can play with it.
Yeah.
That's my main, that's the minimum I require.
But if there's like a national tournament, do they then?
Does it what usually happens, there would be a painting score.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. It's part of like,
and it's like part of your.
Yeah. So you can totally play unpainted. You just can't win the painting competition.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And it's nice because you can, and the thing is,
it's a different hobby.
Exactly. It's a completely different hobby, but it's the same hobby. Mm-hmm. Same, different.
Yeah.
And I ask this because I want to play the game, but also I have like 30 unmade gunplas in bosses at home, which, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. There is no such thing as pile of shame or backlog. Okay. All those things are just potential. It's just potential fun waiting to happen.
Yes, they are potential fun. Potential fun is there. Hasn't happened yet. But yeah, speaking of Conquest, we talked about it a little bit before off the pod. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they put these Fog of War in gameplay is
actually genuinely interested in
that. I saw a couple of people play it before. I didn't realize that was not just a turn mechanic. Mm-hmm. That was a deployment mechanic.
That's a deployment mechanic.
Because there are turn mechanics. I think what's the Star Wars one?
Shatterpoint.
Shatterpoint is they have the thing that creates either turns or shatterpoints, which is like special events, which is cool. But this one was I didn't know it was not only a turn mechanic, but also deployment.
Yes.
So
that mechanic is really what drew me to the game because I think it's very unique and it allows a person to think both strategically and tactically in what unit you want to program as going first, going second, going third. And once you see what's happening on the other side of the table, how your opponent is playing, then you can react. Even if something's already programmed to activate next, you can still decide what you want that unit to do.
Yeah,
I think it has a game of the generals element,
where
you
program that as game generals. I thought that's like preset.
No, you can do whatever you want with that.
Okay,
that's why. Like I was a competitive game of the generals player, and like I had my set, which I don't show anyone.
Yeah,
and it's always what I play with.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for us because we're running out of time, I guess, for this topic.
Well,
we can proceed. But I think it's important because that's a really cool thing that maybe Freddie could explain.
You stole it with your army men.
Sorry, the army men. But what was your could you like tell us about the rule? What was that stacking? Because I don't think all of our audience...
stacking can mean a million things.
Yeah. So what does it mean?
So when I say stacking, you're stacking a deck of cards, which actually don't really do anything as far as the game is concerned. It's basically markers to let you know which unit. So each card will represent what unit's going to activate. Mm-hmm. So when you flip that card up, and then at the start of the round, you prearrange that deck, and each card represents one unit. When you flip up that card, that's the unit you have
to open. So it's time, but are we continuing with this topic for your topic?
For my topic? My topic is, sure, we'll continue this with my topic.
Do your food thing later.
I'll do my food thing at a different time.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, our dear listeners, don't worry, this will not be another food discussion because we're going to talk about conquest.
All right. Sorry? We're at stacking.
We're stacking of the rules.
You prearrange how those cards will be stacked. So you're stacking it. And then you flip them one at a time as your turn comes. So when my turn comes, I'll flip up one card. And that tells me which unit I have to move or activate or move into the table.
So it's kind of like in chess.
It's like kind of like initiative is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But like in a stack.
Yeah. In general, it's like saying like if in chess, your board is empty and then you have a pile of cards that tell you a pawn will come out.
Yeah.
And then... another one, the pawn will now move.
Such a bad like example.
It's a bad example, but
it's kind of like that. Just to give them, kind of like that.
It's not.
But does the stack continue after everything's deployed to activate?
Yes, no. Because you still use the cards as when you activate each unit.
Yeah. So after deploying, it becomes initiative, kinda, which is the interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's your initiative, right? Is it a common pile or is it?
No, it's
you take turns.
We both have a different deck.
Yeah.
So it's my turn. I flip one card off my deck and then it's your turn. You flip one card off your deck until all our cards are revealed and we have activated all our units. And then the round ends and then we go through that again the next round.
You stack your cards.
You stack it again however you want. The only reason why there's light, medium, and heavy, it only determines when your unit can come in.
Mm-hmm.
So on turn one, only light units can come in. On turn two, mediums can come in. On turn three, heavies can come in.
What happens when an idiot puts the heavy on turn one?
You cannot. It's not allowed in the game.
But if you accidentally already did.
Like it's input.
No,
like,
you're like not
tournament,
supposed to.
Tournament rules. You already did.
It's already your turn. Disregarded because that's not supposed to be in that deck.
So it like you don't get to play that card anymore?
Not for that turn.
Okay. Yeah. And then do you play another one?
You play the next one because I can't imagine how somebody would
allow you.
Yeah.
I think you talk about this like exactly. It's like
you're probably not gonna get DQ'd because you're not gonna be allowed to play that.
Not to play the card on that turn.
And it's so easy to repair. If somebody makes that mistake, I don't think it's cheating. It's probably somebody just
that's why I started with if an idiot does.
So the thing is, when you're running a tournament, gaming tournament, the first assumption is
no
one's cheating. You have to assume that they made an honest mistake.
Yeah.
If the same person keeps repeating the same mistake, then that's the only time you escalate the issue.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you give everyone the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
Even makes sense. Yeah. Lands come back to hand.
Yeah.
Let's not get into that.
But, you know, on camera.
What's that cycling lands go back to?
Yeah.
On camera.
On camera where we're doing the over
anyway.
The voiceover. Yeah. But for Conquest, I find it interesting. So as you said, it's both tactical and strategic because you program. So when you program, you're literally creating the order of how your troops will come out every turn. And then at the end of every turn, you switch from tactics, which is like the life, to strategy, which is you're planning out how it's going
to you're planning the next turn. But when you're activating the unit, you have to think tactically based on what your opponent has done. And what your other units have done.
Mm-hmm. I like this game.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting.
So we go to the problem.
which is prohibitive. Well, we'll get to that later. But let's talk about mechanics first. Maybe Freddie can use that as his topic.
You think we're actually continuing this?
I'd probably want to change the topic by then.
But when it comes to the rules, so essentially you have the first round is really just deploying the light.
Where are you light deploying it?
Yeah.
No, it's the first turn.
It's coming off the
first round.
So when you start round one, there's no units on the table.
Yeah.
And only light units are allowed to come in. And not all your light units. You are sure one light unit will come in and some light units may or may not come in. And those are the cards that you will activate for that turn. Second round, you can bring in one medium unit for sure and other medium units have a chance of coming in.
So aside from your stack, you have other cards?
You bring one card per every unit that you have in your army. Mm-hmm. And then when it's available for that turn, that's when you
put it on the stack.
So you don't go through the entire pile?
Not at the start. Mm-hmm. But eventually you will. And then once a unit is removed from the table because your opponent wiped off that unit, then it's removed from your deck.
So your deck becomes smaller in later rounds and you have access to the more powerful units.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Not necessarily. Later, you can just...
Because your most powerful unit might be the one that gets eliminated.
Oh, that too.
Or also, you want to shoot with the more powerful units first, maybe, anyway. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
into the fight earlier.
Is how does Conquest do, like, melee versus ranged? How does it solve that problem?
What was that a problem for 40K?
Other games that have, like, anything that you have shooting. It's not any card game. Anytime that you have shooting.
Well, Mage Knight did a good job of that, but
how did Mage Knight deal with shooting?
Like what's
I remember
the problem?
Like the mage lords range. Were like really strong because they could just shoot people and then they're coming and then
the Magus is what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Because
did they use points to?
No. There's a point system and the Magus had magic blast which allows that guy to shoot through walls.
Yeah.
But no, the thing with, because Mage Knight dealt with that by having some abilities that you can only activate on range. Mm. So like the Magic Blast is specifically a range attack. So when if you're in base contact, you can't use Magic Blast.
I think that's the same for most, but the fact that you can do like just Magic Blasts, anytime that you have range attack, it has a intrinsic benefit versus melee. Because you don't appear engaged unless there's like a rule.
No, but they made like the mage units weaker.
I think mainly the issue is when ranged attacks become too powerful that they dominate the game and everything gets wiped off even before the units engage. The main way that Conquest mitigates that is if you take casualties from ranged attack, you do not take morale tests.
Oh,
and morale tests are a big thing in this game because when you fail morale, you lose additional units.
Yeah, I like how we didn't even know what morale tests are, but we're like, oh,
it made sense.
You already know it's something.
So when you're testing for morale, it also kind of makes sense because if somebody's right in your face, you want to run away. If they're like doing really bad stuff to you, you will run away. If you're still kind of far, you can I don't need to run away yet.
Yeah.
So it still kind of makes sense. So that's how they kind of mitigated the effect of ranged in Conquest. So most games are really decided once you get into the thick of things with the melee combat.
That's a big thing because that's morale is like one of the ways that you lose people.
Yep.
Isn't morale not in other games?
It is. It's just not. This is the first time I've heard that a type of engagement that doesn't have morale tests. Does Conquest aim for more realistic type combat or more arcade type combat?
Arcade.
That's not the right terms, but you know.
I think it's fantasy themed. Okay. They're not really trying to get to realism. What they're trying to do is they're trying to create a game where enjoy it.
Yes.
You know, there's no situation where you deploy your army and then you haven't even taken a turn and then like a third of your army or even worse, half your army is gone before you even take a turn.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very big problem with some games. which is avoided with this system.
Is there any other mechanics that Conquest introduced?
For the benefit of people who don't play like your usual war game, mm-hmm. what are the mechanics? You have armies. They have life? Yes.
They have, when you're playing somebody, every unit has a points cost or threat value. And then you both only get to bring the same amount mm-hmm. of force.
Yeah.
So you make it even. So even from that point of view, it's not realistic. Because in real life, in actual war, there's no such thing as, we have to bring the same amount of force.
There's
just to be honorable. Yes, no. Yes. All historical wars are fought unevenly.
Yeah.
There will be a superior force and an inferior force. Mm-hmm. Of course, occasionally the inferior force will win, but that seldom happens. And it usually happens if there's some like freak thing that happens, like bad weather, or there's like just a brilliant general that took the terrain into consideration and the other general did not.
Yeah.
So things like that.
Well, isn't that represented by the point system? Like the point system is
the point is just like
the point system makes the game balance.
Yeah.
Because it for game systems, mm-hmm. for it to be enjoyable, you have to have the feeling that you have a chance to win.
Yeah. You're all starting.
Most games, you will have a symmetrical starting point.
Yeah.
To make everybody have a fair chance of winning.
Yeah.
When you're designing games, that's an important part of it where you design it for balance. And it's an important part of game design where you also test for balance. So you don't have situations where a game becomes unenjoyable for one side or one player. Things like that are very important.
It sounds like Conquest is really good at adapting all of these lessons learned from all of these other
mm-hmm.
Games, but at the same time creating something that, honestly, the fog of war element of it is one of the things that really is really interesting about mm-hmm. it.
But what's the, how do units die? Is it like if they take 3 hits or something?
Every unit would have stats. So something that would cost more points would probably have more wounds that mm-hmm. it can take before it's taken out of the board.
So it's just alive, dead, no? Mm-hmm.
Like
the clicks games where they get weaker.
Yeah, that's also an interesting thing about the clicks games because they can bring down the stats.
Or go up for some...
Yeah, but most war games, like an infantry unit, it's either there or it's not there.
So even the group of infantry where because I see some people where as mm-hmm. the infantry are dying mm-hmm. they actually take out
you take out, like if you have a unit of let's say 12 and then you suffer 3 wounds, you take out 3.
Oh, but their attack is going to be the same. It doesn't change.
Yes, yeah, it degrades.
Oh, it also degrades.
Yeah, so when you lose
as a unit
mm-hmm.
as a unit
you lose one stand, then you lose attacks because one stand represents X number of attacks.
And what's the hit system? Is it a d6?
Yes, Conquest. It's D6. And the interesting thing is with Conquest, unlike more traditional war games where you want to roll high, in this game you want to roll low. But this is only becomes a problem if you're used to older systems.
Because if you're
where new. I have this stat, therefore a higher stat would require me to allow me to roll lower.
Yeah.
So if I have a 5, then I only need 2 and up. My stat is 5, I need a 2 and up. In Conquest, if you say your stat is 4, you don't need to have that 5, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3. You don't need that table. What you do is when my stat is 4, that means I can roll 4 and below. It's much easier.
It's 4
to hit.
Essentially.
You don't need to refer to a table. So that's it. It only becomes a barrier if you're stuck to
different
old way of thinking.
Yeah, this is definitely easier because like 3 to hit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to remember a table where you have to cross-reference.
Yeah.
Also, if my stat is 3, I need a 4. My stat is 4, I need a 3.
Yeah.
My stat is 5,
I even know 2. That the other games were... Is that for most other games? Or
yes, I think that's...
Because one game started it and everyone mm-hmm. has followed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh. But if you really think about it,
it doesn't make sense.
This actually is more intuitive.
Yeah, intuitiveness, I think, is not what they were trying to do with the old chain mail and the thing that Peter Cushing is doing. They're trying for historical accuracy. So tables is like a big thing that they like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Historical war gamers, actually, when they try to create their games or they try to reenact actual battles, so they will have an asymmetric game.
Yeah.
But for historical war gamers, they have a different goal. They're not really trying to, they want to recreate history.
The situation.
And then do what if scenarios.
Yeah.
Or what if instead of charging here, they did this, what would happen?
Yes.
So they have a very different goal. They're entertaining themselves by doing what ifs.
Yes, that is what was the one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's what they were doing.
Wow. Yeah. But for miniature wargaming, it's really just like two people who want to kind of play like chess. That's why chess is a symmetric game. Everybody has the exact same pieces. In modern miniature wargaming, you get to choose your pieces, but it's balanced out by the point system.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, we can probably talk about more Conquest
in the future
when I start playing when I have time to paint or not.
So, for my topic, I'd like to ask you guys.
Oh.
You guys are both gamers. So, what value has play, the act of playing, what value has it brought to your lives?
Wow, that's so deep. Elvin, go for it.
That's so deep. That's not really part of what we do in this podcast. No, seriously though. There are a lot of things that, one of the main things is that that it brings to my life, not just my personal life, but professional life actually, is GMing or DMing.
Mm-hmm.
So I DM for my friends for the longest time. Mm-hmm. I started DMing when I was a kid for my neighbors, my sister. We'd play D&D and I'd run the game because I'm the one that understands the book. I read it, etc. We found that the skills that you have for a DM to prepare games, to facilitate a group of people towards a goal that you're trying to, this is a narrative, translates almost perfectly to training and facilitation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So teaching, there's a lot of skills, the preparation,
mm-hmm.
the sort of on-the-fly nature of GMing that you have to be, the goal of incorporating other people, getting people to join you in the activity that you're doing. These are skills that I learned as a GM or a DM
mm-hmm.
that translated into that.
I want to do something that's not deep, but this is an actual thing that gave me. It's not so much value, but it's like a life improvement kind of. Because I used to have what we call here pasma,
mm-hmm.
or your handshake and everything when you do everything right. Mm-hmm. Mine didn't really go away, but like lessened significantly. Not the sweating. The sweating I needed Botox to get rid of, mm-hmm. but the, like literally I have Botox in my hands, so it doesn't sweat as bad. Anyway, but the shaking I disappeared after I did like painting and making gunpla and stuff like that, because of like it required you to have precision.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that just gave me control and stuff. Yeah. So I just wanted to do something not as profound, but I have a lot more. But that I find that interesting.
Yeah, I think the social aspect of the gaming, the particular type of gaming that we're talking about, is really one of the most important positives that the gaming brings to our lives. It's because games are like social lubricants.
Yep.
Mm. And even for us right now, we're trying to integrate games into schools
mm-hmm.
as a form or a way to teach specific topics, like what you said, group dynamics, cooperation, leadership, and basically even introducing specific topics with science and conservation, stuff like that. And it's just a very natural form of learning.
Yeah, experiential.
Yeah, it's an experiential learning.
Yeah. And that's really, really fun. And the really fun thing about experiential learning is that you'll notice a lot of people are actually, when you teach them how to play, they say the same thing, especially if they aren't like, there's certain people that like to read the rules. Mm-hmm. They'll read the rules often, but a lot of them will tell you, okay, just let me play and I'll learn the rules mm-hmm. for that. And those are a lot of people like that, that like to experience it. And that's how they learn. And then when you translate it to other skills, you'll realize that if you learn how to do a game or how to play a game in that manner, then that's also the best way that you learn how to do other skills, mm-hmm. because you want to experience it.
Yes.
So instead of learning, reading about, say, how to program, do programming exercises. Mm-hmm. Instead of learning how to, reading about how to edit, like try to do editing of videos or something. Mm-hmm. You experience
like episodeify.com. I'm sorry.
like our friends at episodeify.com.
I'm curious though, what's your, like, how do you do it?
How do I do what?
The learning, the game.
I like to read and then...
Reading.
So I read it from start to finish quickly. And then I start playing. And then I go back to reference. That's also the reason why I play Monopoly correctly. And mm-hmm. that's why, like, I played it one time.
But the thing is, no one cares.
Yeah,
play Monopoly. Yeah, correctly.
Well, it's a cousin of mine wanted to play Monopoly. It's like, hey, you want to play Monopoly? Okay, I haven't played Monopoly in so long. I read the rules of so long. Okay, let's play it. And we played it. It was cutthroat.
Yeah,
it was cutthroat. It was cruel. The bidding. And you realize, oh, this was created by a guy that wanted to show you that late stage capitalism is horrible for people, because you start stealing from others and you take from them and your only interactions with them are in order for you to put them in a position for you to take from them. And nice. Oh, this is not something that my 10-year-old mm-hmm. cousin was thinking of when he started.
Monopoly is okay if you play it wrong.
You can
land somewhere, you can build a hotel if you have the money.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
I think that's the most fun way to... It's wrong, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
But I think that's the most fun way because it just becomes random.
And that's actually an interesting thing about games where it has many different goals. There's a game mm-hmm. that you were trying to have fun, as our previous topic. Yeah, you're trying to have fun with a match where both of you have an equal chance of winning. And then you're trying to develop that. And there are others, their goal is not to like win or lose. It's to experience this situation.
Mm-hmm.
The example that we have for Monopoly, where we have a situation where the game creates a commentary on its own, or it's just a fun little...
But even the problem with that is, even if Monopoly does create a commentary on its own, like, no one cares.
Well, the designer cared.
Yeah.
Clearly, and some people. There's like, mm-hmm. if you remember the story about this game called Train. Have you heard of that?
Train?
Train. The name of the story is... Name of the game is Train. It was, I believe, a art piece. So essentially, it's a board game. The idea is you're a train conductor and you're trying to maximize the amount of people that you can fit in your train.
Mm. Well, when you said art piece, it's just... I'm going to guess this is really bad.
Yeah. So the twist is that you discover later on that you're a train conductor in Auschwitz. So mm-hmm. when that part of the game is revealed, the creator of the art piece says that the players of the game suddenly change tactics from being maximizing their...
Mm-hmm. To minimizing.
To try and minimizing the number mm-hmm. of people that they have for... Because
what's the goal of the game?
That's the thing. Some people still continue because they see it's a game. I can separate myself from the concept mm-hmm. of, oh, this is...
The morality of it.
The morality of it. Mm-hmm. You know, or like, oh, I'm putting myself in it. Well, other people can't remove themselves mm-hmm. from that situation.
You know, like, it's a game.
That's why it's an art piece. That's why it's an art mm-hmm. piece, because they're trying to...
Okay, I mean, that wasn't as bad as what I thought it would be. Like, mean bad a game.
Yeah.
It's like Ticket to Ride Auschwitz edition.
Yes.
Ticket to Ride Auschwitz. Ticket to Ride to Auschwitz. What the... Wow.
Yeah, that's Europe is completely different. This map of Europe, why do all of the trains go to one place?
Yeah, but... An interesting thing with Monopoly is... Let's go, you know, dive into that social commentary thing. In that game, actually, you all start symmetrical. Everybody starts with the same amount of money.
Yes.
No property. And by sheer luck of chance, dice,
yeah.
somebody will get an edge. And the moment that somebody gets an edge, it almost overrides the element of luck.
Yeah.
But the moment you have that slight advantage, it just piles on.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point of the game.
But I think there's also the point that if someone swindles you, even if you're lucky, they can win.
Yeah, if somebody's like manipulating the bank's money.
Yeah, yeah, the banker advantage. The banker advantage.
Or just say with the bidding, right?
The bidding is like when you bid with things that are not in the game, like, oh, so...
Or are you allowed technically?
The rules are very vague. So if you say, well... If you do the dishes, you get free parking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember, it's a family game.
Technically, yeah.
So, but the thing is with games that simulate things in real life,
yeah.
I think what a lot of people mistake games as are, they're not real simulations.
No.
Yeah.
Like Monopoly.
Even the game of life.
Monopoly tries to simulate something, but it's not. People think, oh, I'm good at this game, therefore I should be good at this in real life. No.
Yeah.
Games are a very different form of entertainment. Of course, you use critical thinking.
Yeah.
It trains your brain to think critically, strategically, tactically.
There was actually a game that network marketing people used for this. I think it's the something magnate.
Oh, business magnate? Is it?
Yeah. Oh. They get, I forgot what group this is. It's like your Uno or New Skin or whatever, right? But it's not any of those. Okay. Or I'm not sure. Anyway, they start with, you have a business, they teach you business, like blah, blah, blah. And then they end up with, okay, here's a game. And then once you're good at it, see, you can be good at business. Now, how can you apply that? Here's our starter pack.
Yeah, that was actually a very
it's called pyramid scheming.
Yeah,
that's what I said. Network marketing.
Okay. Network.
So that's one thing I always try to tell people. Not just because you're good at Ticket to Ride, you should operate the mass rail transit. No, those are two different skills.
Yeah.
Of course, there's things that you can carry over.
Yeah.
Like how you train your brain to think critically, to think strategically, but a game that simulates something will not actually mean you're good at Splendor, you can be a jeweler. Right? It's not. It's a very different thing.
To be fair though, if there's a game that the mechanics of the game make you
Lemonade. Well, that's a computer game, but Lemonade Tycoon.
Huh? because if the skills, because the skills that you need to succeed in a game is the skills that are you need to succeed in the task.
But that's very rare.
It's very rare. Yes, exactly. It's
even almost, for the business magnate game, I don't think.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Games are, I think, very good for training specific skills.
But when it comes
to real life circumstances, there's a lot more nuance and a lot more factors that come into play, which cannot be distilled into a 30-minute game.
Yeah.
I think the closest that's kind of common is the social deduction games. Where if you're good at social reading people, that's kind of...
The problem with sometimes with social deduction is if you're good at bullying, then you're good at social deduction games.
There is that factor. Like, the guy who kind of shouts loudest will get heard more.
Yeah. That's one of the things with social deductions, which is why Blood in the Clock Tower is an interesting social deduction game. But I think a lot of skills are there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we should... I think you really raise a really good point at the end there that we shouldn't equate skill in the game into skill in life, although you can learn life skills in the game.
Yep.
It's the... I think it's the storytelling aspect of being a storyteller. That's you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very good topic for maybe some other day.
Yeah, like it's if you're a storyteller in the game, then you can actually become a good storyteller in real life.
Oh,
because that's how you change people's minds.
Yeah.
By telling stories.
Yep.
It's not facts, it's stories.
Stories, absolutely.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Random Pinoy Geek Podcast. This has been JR with Elvin and Freddy. And remember, it's okay to geek out
as long as you know when to stop.